Well done, Jeshua, eh? When we think about Peter's denial, when we look back on that as Christians, we often focus on things like failure and what that means. We think about the cost of being a follower of Jesus. We think about forgiveness. We think about restoration, three denials, three opportunities to say he loved Jesus later. We focus on things like God's grace, the grace of God for forgiveness, the grace of God when we don't deserve it. We focus on things like getting a fresh start, God of the second chance. And we think about transformation because we see the change in Peter when the Holy Spirit came on the day of Pentecost. And we often judge Peter for what he did. How could he do that? How could he who had stayed with Jesus for so long do what he did that day? But might I suggest it's very easy for us to judge from the comfort of our 21st century Australian Western mindset. It's very different for us today. We face nothing like Peter faced. And this weekend, I want to focus not on what Peter did, nor even how Jesus responded to what Peter did, but on what Jesus would have desired from us in the first place. It's all well and good to know there's another chance. There's a second chance. He's the God of mercy and we can keep going back and receive grace and mercy. But wouldn't it be great if we got it right the first time? Don't get me wrong, it's amazing to see the mercy of God working. He works in our lives so beautifully. It's amazing to see the love of God and how far that goes. It's unconditional. It's amazing to see the power of forgiveness. To see grace in action even when we mess up big time. But it shouldn't excuse us from failing to obey in the first place. Grace is kind of our magic reset button, isn't it? We kind of just, maybe we press it too much. Maybe we're at this place where we have to hit the magic reset too often. But we often use it to justify our own disobedience. That's what it is. Let's call it what it is. And yet Jesus is very specific about not denying him. He's incredibly specific about that. If you want to read that for yourself, you see there's some serious ramifications for denying Jesus. He says that if we deny him, he will deny us before the Father. So let's explore what Jesus would have preferred from Peter that day. In Matthew chapter 5, we read the Sermon on the Mount, a time when Jesus stood on a mountainside and spoke. And if you've ever read it, it's so full of stuff. I mean, you can do a massive study on it straight away. It's a cracking read, but it's very challenging too. And it starts with the Beatitudes, which we like because it's all about blessed is, but we like to be blessed. But then in Matthew 5, verse 13 to 16, it says this, "You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It's no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. You are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden, neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven." Now, salt and light may seem like rather odd examples to us now, but in the first century, salt and light were incredibly important and a lot more valuable than we now think of them. In ancient Greece, there was this huge industry built around salt being exchanged for slaves. Salt was so valuable that they would use salt to pay for slaves. And that's where the phrase that we use today came from, when you get a slave who's not worth his salt. The Roman soldiers were given special salt rations. And it was called salarium argentum in Latin, which is actually the root of our English word for salary. They were paid in salt. In the Roman marketplace, it was even used as currency to barter for things. Salt was a lot more valuable then to those people than it is to us today. Like, you can buy a little packet of salt, Coles brand, for $1.20 probably. Doesn't seem to have the same value. So we need to understand what it was like in those times. And of course, light. Today we take electricity for granted. But in Jesus' time, you couldn't switch a light on. You couldn't call the power network company if something went wrong. At night, the streets would have been pitch black. If any of you have been to places in the world like India in the mountains, like we have been, you'll know what pitch blackness looks like. There are just no lights. You had to get a lamp if you could afford one. You'd have to put oil in it, and you'd have to find a flame to light it. Light was something precious and important. And without it, life would virtually stop. Can you imagine if we had no lights after dark? We'd all be in bed, I think, because there'd be no TV. You couldn't see what you were doing anyway. So Jesus uses these two things, salt and light, as vivid examples of what his followers need to bring to the world, to add to the world. And the reasons are quite clear. When you look at salt, salt preserves and purifies. It seasons, it adds flavor, it makes you thirsty. Light dispels the darkness. You put one light on in a dark room and instantly you can see. Light has to be exposed or revealed to be useful. You can't put it under a bowl, Jesus said. And we know that light is essential for life. So at first glance, salt and light sound like a strange strategy for reaching the world, but we have to understand that Jesus was using them as very vivid, important metaphors in his day. We might use iPhones today. I don't know what we'd use. But something that's valuable and important to us that we place greater value in than it probably is worth. But the one thing that salt and light both have in common is they have a radical influence on whatever they touch, whatever they come into contact with. Have you ever put salt in your coffee instead of sugar or on your cereal? It makes a big difference, doesn't it? Who's done that? I am. Yeah. This is the focus of the Sermon on the Mount, that we as salt and light must make an influence, to make a difference, an appreciable, noticeable difference. You know, if you taste food without salt and then you taste it with salt, there is a vast difference in the flavor of the food. But Peter sadly chose to hide his light, to fail to season his world at a moment of difficulty. And I would suggest that there are times that we don't do it all that well either. If we're confronted with something which is a little bit difficult, do we hide our light? Do we not season with our salt and allow others to influence us? When Jesus said we are the salt of the earth and the light of the world, he wasn't just suggesting it. These are requirements. These are expectations for following him. You are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. No ifs, no buts, no maybes. And Jesus doesn't say you're a bit like salt. He doesn't say, one day you might be a little bit like a light. We are these things. We are called to be these things. It's our purpose on earth as his disciples. The reason we are still here, it's who we are and why we live in this world, is because God has called us to be salt and to be light. You see, once we acknowledge that Jesus is Lord in our lives, we are automatically tasked with functioning as salt and light immediately. No later on, it's now. It's this moment. It's up to us. I found this great phrase online that I put up, and I want you to read this. It says, if you want a better world composed of better nations, inhabited by better states, filled with better regions, made up of better cities, comprised of better neighborhoods, illuminated by better churches, populated with better families, then start by becoming a better person. Might I suggest in this room that we would start by becoming better disciples, better followers of Jesus. See, we need to be the influencers, not the followers. We need to be exposed, not hidden. We need to be the ones who influence, not the ones who follow what others do and say. And we can't sit around waiting for someone else to get involved in changing the world for Jesus. We are salt and we are light. We need to make ourselves visible and tangible to the people around us, to step up and make saltiness and light a lifestyle. So instead of hiding our light and allowing the darkness to take control, because that's what happens. When we don't shine our light, darkness has control. We need to shine brighter. Instead of letting the world dilute the flavor of Jesus, we need to add the flavor of Christ to our situations. Now, Peter had three denials. One was a servant girl, then there was another servant girl, and then after a while, a group of people said, "You were with him, weren't you?" And he denied three times, "I don't even know him," getting angrier and angrier as he went along. And yet only a few hours before, he did draw a sword and he cut off the ear of the high priest's servant. Ooh. Could have picked a better bloke to do it to. So what happened in those intervening hours where he was brave and bold enough to cut off the ear of the servant of the high priest? I was watching a TV program the other day. Apparently the high priest, he was as important in Jerusalem as Pilate was. They worked together. He's cut off the ear of one of the most important men in Israel's servant. And yet a few hours later, a servant girl says, "You were with him, weren't you?" And he goes, "No, I never knew him." What happened? I would suggest he was afraid. Maybe he was afraid of being alienated because there was only a few of them. I mean, he had no Jesus left around to help him. He was gone. Maybe he was afraid of persecution. Maybe ultimately he was afraid of death, that he too would be killed and nailed to a cross. This man had spent so much time with Jesus. He was one of the core group. But Peter was afraid. So he hid his light and he lost his ability to influence. I wonder what might have happened if he'd addressed that group of people the way he addressed the crowd on the day of Pentecost. What difference there might have been. Or if he'd merely said, "Yes, I was with him. But if you'd seen what I'd seen, if you knew him as I know him, then maybe you wouldn't be so keen to see him dead." And it's easy to look back and wonder at Peter's weakness. It's easy to think poorly of him. And yet every day you and I have opportunities to add salt or be light. And without even uttering the words, "I don't know him," we deny him. Does the way that you live point people to Jesus? Can they look at you and honestly see that you bring a different flavor into their world? Are you demonstrating Christ in a very real way that makes people wonder, thirst, and see light? Just a few weeks ago, Deshantri was sharing with us about her new job and the fact that without saying a word, they knew she was different. They could see that she brought light and salt into their environment. Last week, I was speaking to Julie and she was saying how she's been given a name at work. Well, you know what? She wears that name as a badge of honor. Because she stands out as a Christian in her workplace. I knew many, many people when I was at work, when I worked for the government many years ago. And I've told you this before. When I first became a Christian, suddenly all of these people came out the woodwork and said, "Oh, I go to church too." They were hiding their light and they're hiding their salt. I had no idea they were Christians. A Christian doesn't hide their light, they let it shine. A Christian adds flavor. The flavor of God's grace and the flavor of God's goodness wherever they go. You know, the world has tried to tell us that faith is a private matter. It's a private matter. Let me tell you something. That is far from the truth. Far from the truth. Because Jesus calls us to be very public and very noticeable. He doesn't call us to be private. He calls us to be publicly involved, to shine light where there is darkness, to bring salt where there is no flavor. The people who heard Jesus on the mountain that day that he spoke the Sermon on the Mount, they understood what he meant by salt and light. And today we take salt and light for granted, really. I mean, if we have no power for half an hour, we get all upset. Straight on the online, try and see on our phones where what Power Networks is doing now. I do it. What? No air conditioning? And we take these things for granted. But maybe we take Jesus for granted too. See, the crowd on the mountainside fully understood what Jesus expects of his followers, that they are to be involved in the world around them. And do we take God's grace for granted? It's true that Jesus does use our mistakes and our failures and the things that we do wrong to teach us valuable lessons that we can learn from. I mean, what happened to Peter is an example of one of those significant examples of what happens when we go wrong. But what have we done with the lesson? How has that lesson changed us? Do we just read it as a great story and focus only on, well, I can do what I like because God will forgive me? He did it with Peter. Do we focus only on the forgiveness and second chance aspect? And let me tell you something, they are so important. They give us encouragement, they give us hope. I'm not saying they're not important. But do we use them as an excuse or justification? Well, you know, Peter denied Jesus 3 times. I've not done that much. And he forgave him. It's true, he will forgive you. But isn't it better if for once we applied the lessons and willingly did what Jesus asks us to do? You are salt. You are light. Go and make a difference. That we would be salt and light. I mean, what's the worst thing that can happen? In Australia, I don't think there's a death penalty for being salt and light. I've not heard of one. What's the worst thing that can happen? Maybe you're afraid of a little bit of alienation like Peter might have been. But we have nothing to fear. The great thing that we have that Peter later had that made him stand up so boldly on the day of Pentecost is the Holy Spirit who lives within. We are without excuse. We can look at Peter and say, well, he got another chance, so I'll get another chance. But you know what? He wasn't full of the Spirit. Yeah, he'd been with Jesus for 3 years, but I've been with Jesus for more than 3 years. Why put ourselves through guilt and anguish like Peter did? When we can actually avoid all of that shame and all of that guilt and all of that wasted energy and time by simply trusting him and standing for him. And just as Jesus went to the cross willingly to fulfill the Father's will, we should willingly be salt and light to fulfill the will of Jesus. I wonder if this is the cross he's called us to bear. Take up your cross daily and follow me. Maybe the cross that we are to take up is to be salt and light when we don't feel like it. We readily accept his gift of grace. Let's willingly accept his call. I think Peter should have remembered the Sermon on the Mount. In verse 11 of Matthew 5, it says, "Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven." Peter was there that day that was spoken. I wonder why he didn't remember that. We all know it's Easter. We've seen the caravans on the road. But let's not spend this Easter criticizing chocolate makers for removing the word Easter from their chocolate eggs, or complain about hot cross buns being out too early. That's not being salt and light. That's being a whiny Christian. There are more important matters at hand and better ways to influence people. In fact, we should stop expecting the world to act like salt and light, because that's our responsibility, not theirs. We proclaim him. The world is not responsible for that. There are better ways, more impactful, personal ways that we can influence people by being salt and light. If the musicians could come. So I want to leave you with a question this morning that is probably twofold. How's your saltiness? Can people taste the difference? When you walk into a situation, what do you bring that changes the flavor of what you're around? I know what it's like. It's easy when you're at work, when people are talking, you know, dirty jokes and stuff, to suddenly meld in and be part of what they're doing. But we are to be salt and light. Without being religious, we can say, well, you know, thanks, guys, but that's not me. And the second part of that question is, how's your light? Is it hidden? Does it only come out when you feel comfortable? Does it only come out when you think you need it? Might I suggest we are salt and light. Not sometimes, not maybe, not in certain circumstances. We are the salt of the earth and the light of the world. Let's go and shine and change. Amen. God bless you.